Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and not having a beer is annoying.
Oh my God.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading The Sympathizer by, I'm sorry now, Viet Thanh Nguyen? It's my best attempt.
When?
Now.
Damn it.
Jinx, you owe me a beer. And I think Nate's drinking one.
Yeah.
All right. So the very first line of the book, he says, I am a man of two minds. I can understand both sides of an issue. Also, in the story, he is an undercover agent. So wouldn't you say he's kind of like a beast of both worlds by Lagunitas? This is what's written on the can. It a bi-coastal IPA. East Coast flavor, West Coast clarity, 8% alcohol.
So it's just a non-hazy IPA. Hazy IPA.
That's what it's supposed to be. I wouldn't say, I mean, it's all right. It's pretty good. It uses a darker malt than, you know, most New England IPAs. But it is sweet and it is clear. I can see into the can a little bit.
Just the way
it's pretty good.
I want you to evaluate it. So Nate, you selected this book for us this week, right?
I read it when it came out, and I loved it, but it wasn't famous enough to do on the podcast. And then this year, we're like, fuck it, let's just do books we like. So I think we should read this one.
I mean, it was famous the year it came out.
But not since then.
Yeah, but not since then. It won the Pulitzer or some shit, right?
Yep.
Yes, it
National
did.
Book Award? Yeah. So it had a moment in the sun.
As we've done the Booker books a few years now, and we try to cash in on the big winners, they have a moment of one season until the next big award is announced. Very few books stay famous. And sadly, it's actually the shitty books that stay famous much longer.
They have broader appeal.
Usually if a movie is made out of it and the movie does well, or if the author has a fatwa put on him, then it becomes famous.
That does help.
Either or.
So the book is interesting. The narrator, it's still flashbacks and you find out much later, like confessing something, but the narrator, who doesn't have a name, I don't think, is a Vietnam. No. Well, he's from Vietnam, but he is half Vietnamese and half French, right? They were the colonial power there.
His father was a French priest.
That's typical of the French, anything that they are just horny, horny men. He's just, aha, de pussy. And then he just like had to, I mean, I don't think anyone's surprised. This was the first, you just reminded me of the opening line there, Nate, of, you know, I'm a man of two minds or whatever. The theme of duality will be present throughout the entire book to a point where it's like, I think even I could notice that. Even, you know, Helen Keller could see it. and then you look up the author.
Says, I get it. You're like, I get it too, finally.
But then the... You know, then you realize, oh, it's because the, you know, the author has a PhD in like writing or something or literature. So,
He's a professor also. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, super academic type. My God. Where is after? I'm trying to find out what his PhD is in. It's in English. So,
because his family fled Vietnam when he was 4.
Right.
And he grew up here.
So there's probably some semblance. It's not autobiographical anyway, but there's some stuff in there, I'm sure, that's based on family history, whatever. But you're like, the themes of duality present throughout this book, being constant in like the two forms of things and the contrast. An English teacher definitely would have written a book like that. But the main character is talking, and he is, in the beginning, you don't realize right away, or at least I didn't, because I'm not a professor of English. He is working for a South Vietnamese, and they were the good guys. We wanted them to win, because Coca-Cola and shit. And they were the capitalist, sort of democratically elected people. And
very loosely democratically elected. If you count stuffing the ballot box, then he was fairly elected.
Hey, listen, Nate, we counted for Biden, so we had to count it for them too, you know?
And then we assassinated the president, or we allowed him to be assassinated.
Listen, that little bastard must have pissed off LBJ in some way. Have you ever seen the picture of him and LBJ in the Oval Office? It's comical.
It was Kennedy. Actually, it was Kennedy that authorized the assassination of Diem.
And then that was open season on Kennedy. They're like, oh, we're killing presidents now? Okay.
Duality.
There you go. Imagine there's like a whole other world, you know, like the Lincoln Kennedy thing. So there's like a Kennedy Diem thing. It's like Diem had sex with Vietnam's hottest movie star too. they're parallel lives.
America's in this Vietnam War, you know, because
we were saving democracy,
communism allegedly, and we like to blow stuff up. And America, they love a good war, you know. We like blowing shit up because we always win, except sometimes you don't.
We should have known we weren't going to win a war against a people where literally half of their last names is Win.
This can is dented, so it's not opening. I punctured it. Okay. This is a... Ooh, Jesus Christ. This is a bourbon barrel-aged imperial stout with Ugandan cacao nibs and toasted coconut, 10% alcohol from Wild East. Good luck to me. I hope the can fell and I don't have botulism.
I don't think botulism can live in there.
There's too much alcohol in this one. It's good. It's surprisingly like light for how much booze and stout you'd think this would be. But it's a
brewers are moving away from the cloying dessert pastry stuff.
I mean, I'm also just like sometimes they feel like physically like thicker and heavier. But this one's pretty chill. It is definitely strong. You feel the 10%, but it's good. Yeah. I mean, Wild East makes a bunch of, like, I want to say pretty average. I've had a bunch of them. They're like, they're not bad. They're okay. This one, I'd say, is their best one that I've had easily.
Spoken like a real stout fanboy.
Well, they have a bunch of like a Czech dark lager. I was like, sure, okay, you know.
You know, there are beer nerds, the beer gatekeeper nerds who are like, oh, that's real brewing, or that's a shitty brewery because they don't make a really good Czech style pilsner.
Let me check. Oh, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. No, so there's a big push for that. I mean, those are styles that some people do like, you know, the lagers. They're easy drinking beers. They're
beer flavored beer.
They're actually really hard to make a good one. So that's why beer nerds, you know, it's like, you know, the equivalent of like some painter who's like, don't show me how you paint. Show me how you make red. You know, they're like, show me the basic thing. And like, I could really evaluate
a perfect circle on the wall.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
So I mean by that, I mean, a portrait of the band, a perfect circle.
Yeah. You need the guy from Tool in the middle of it. Maynard wearing like prosthetic tits and a cowboy hat and stuff.
Much like America, a pair of tits and a cowboy hat.
That is America. And God, and when God made America, that's what he was picturing. So in the beginning, narrator is working for this general. He's like the...
He's the captain.
Captain, but he's like... So he's not a military position. He's like the assistant.
So he is in the military. So this is... So the book opens in the final days. So it's April 1975. That's, you know, this is days before the fall of Saigon. And everyone knows it. So this is the very end of the war. The United States has pulled out their troops like over the previous year and so the Americans thought that they had trained enough of the Vietnamese to actually be able to defend themselves, or at least defend themselves for a while, so that they wouldn't get totally overrun by North Vietnam. This is what Nixon and Kissinger thought was going to happen. That's not what happened, because they were overrun extremely fast, and this is exactly what happened in Afghanistan in 2021. But, you know, so apparently we never learn our lesson, but it happened first in Vietnam. So anyway, the main character, I forget his rank, but he's sort of like aide-de-camp to like the general of the secret police, or like the military police.
I just got to congratulate you, Nate. That's the first time in my life I've heard someone say aide-de-camp out loud. I have read it. I've laughed at it thinking it was a camp of AIDS people, people with AIDS. Especially when the plural is like AIDS de camp and you're like, oh, AIDS the camp. That's where they perform Rent. but I've never heard someone say it out loud. And well done.
It doesn't come up a lot.
It doesn't. That's why, like, one of those words, you're like, oh, that's how you say that one.
I may never have said it out loud before. So it's the first time for everything. Anyway, he's a word general, but he himself is a double agent. He is a communist who was sent in, who was sent back to South Vietnam to join the army and to spy on South Vietnam. And so he has, throughout the war, been feeding intelligence to the North and stuff like that. But he actually works for this, either the military police or the secret police. So he doesn't do like troop movements, but he does do spies. Like, they arrest people, they try and arrest as many Viet Cong as they can find. The book doesn't go into that. Well, it does kind of go into that, actually. But right in the beginning, everyone is scrambling to get out. Like, the very first scene is where the general and his wife are like, we should call our CIA guy and tell him to get us a plane because we need to get the fuck out of here. And so they do. And so the very first chapter or two is the main character just thinking about his life in Vietnam and about how he has to leave everything, and about how he's kind of this double agent, though, and that he's going to go and spy on the Vietnamese leaving the country, leaving South Vietnam. But also he goes to the guy, he has to bribe the guy giving out visas, and the visa guy is like, this is not nearly enough money for my bribe. And the main character's like, they're not yours. Why should I have to fucking pay you anything? Anyway, so
there's a good line there that I highlighted, I really liked, where he's like, they were only paper, aren't they? But to a bureaucrat, paper was never just paper. Paper was life. And it's so true.
Brilliant.
Like, it's a really funny line.
A lot of really great lines like that in this book. So anyway, he chooses who has to get out, and, you know, because everyone not only wants to leave, but they also want to bring all of their cousins and aunts and uncles and everyone. And there's one plane. So finally he...
with no seats. And then the Americans are like... plane. They're like, you're little people. We figure we normally put X number of Americans, but we're going to put three times that many of you. That's what he says. And you're just going to hold on to each other and stand. And you're going to like it.
And it's a cargo plane. It's a U.S. military cargo plane. And so they go there. They like wait, and the cargo plane isn't there. And then finally, there's a lot of really good passages. There's a passage where he sees the prostitutes at the airport, and he's like, it's almost like they bombed the villages so that young women couldn't actually work in the rice paddies because we closed them down to fight the VC, which then meant people had no choice but to move to the cities to become prostitutes. He's like, and this is what the war has done to us. So
that's
just
an unfortunate byproduct of capitalism, Nate. Adam Smith referred to it as the invisible hand job. Come on. Well, that's pretty good. Almost as good as an invisible hand job.
Also, the main character has brought... So actually, he has two best friends, one of which is a communist like himself, and he's in the North, and he's going to be... And he's who he sends all his reports to. But his other friend is a fervent Catholic anti-communist. His name is Bon, and he's one of the people that he brings his family... So the main character, and it's kind of so annoying to call the main character that the whole time, because it doesn't...
The narrator.
Let's just pick a generic Vietnamese name. How about we just call him Charlie the whole time? Is that they called them?
Yeah.
I don't know why. Nate, you probably know. Why the
Viet
fuck?
Cong, C, Charlie.
C for Charlie?
I think it's C for Charlie, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so Ho Chi Minh Jr.
But like the Viet Cong was like the name someone else called them. It wasn't the name they called themselves. It means something like... It means something...
Okay,
they
so there are multiple organizations.
Donkey Kong.
There's the Army of the Republic of Vietnam, and then there's the Viet Cong, one of which is a regular army, and the other one is a guerrilla army. And so they're not regular soldiers. They don't wear uniforms. They're not just 19-year-old men or 19-year-old boys. So they're very much like... So the VC were the We're the guerrilla soldiers.
It's a contraction of Vietnam Cong San, which means Vietnamese communist. That's all it is.
Pretty accurate.
There you go.
It's very straightforward.
But weren't they all? So anyway, so he, Bon and his wife, and Bon's wife and child, they're like, he gets them visas, and they go out to Saigon, the airport, and then the airplane comes in, and they're all like, literally a taxi's on the runway, and like, everybody get on, doesn't even turn off its engines. But then they get attacked, they get like, shelled, because it is literally the last day. It is, there are, you know,
it's the last plane.
Yeah, they're more or less the last plane, and their plane gets hit, and then everybody leaves, but then there's a second plane, everybody rushes on, but as everybody's dashing across the tarmac, under fire, Bon's wife and son are shot and killed, and so they, like, literally grab them, you literally, like, running to the plane as it's taxiing, and, like, jump on with the bodies, and they fly out, and clearly they're dead, and so...
He has to hold, the narrator, doesn't he hold... The kid doesn't. He holds.
It's either the wife or the kid.
He holds one of the bodies for the whole flight. Them. It's fucking horrible. Now for the kid.
Yeah, this is after, like, Bon is already a fervent anti-communist because they killed his other family before, and now they've killed his current family, right?
Yeah.
And his kid is barely aged. Oh, it says barrel aged. Well, anyway, I have this beer.
Oh God.
I had to find a way to drink it, and it's the only nice beer I had in the fridge. This is from Lawson's Finest Liquids, and it's Faisten, barrel-aged. I realize I misread that. That's embarrassing.
Faisten?
It's in Faisten Maple. We've had that beer a long time ago, which I think is a place in Vermont or in New England. Nate recognized the word. He was like, oh, that's also a place that hates taxes. I forget what it was.
I did.
Faisten, F-A-Y-S-T-O-N, or maybe I'm not saying like Faisten or something. I don't know. I thought you recognized it. Anyway, Faisten Maple is an imperial stout aged in whiskey barrels.
Must have been all that beer.
With coffee. It's 12.75%. Mixing fractions and decimals. What the fuck, man? Oh my God, it smells like coffee. And it, oh, that's really smooth. It's really nice. It'll be barely aged in this glass before I drink it. It's very good. Is it worth $20 for the bottle? I don't know. That was pretty good. By the way, I've forgotten to say this for the last like 17 episodes. If you want to support the podcast and keep these beers flowing, you can head over to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub to help us out, where you can get all sorts of stuff like early access to content. Like you're listening to, some of you are hearing this now. I got a text from somebody listening to an episode that I know hasn't come out yet. He's like, this is great. And I had to pain me to say, eventually the plebs will hear it too. But for now, it's just for you. We'll have exclusive content, live things, so much more. If you don't want to do that, you can leave a review wherever you're listening, or just tell someone to check it out. That will all help the podcast and help us pretend that this is not a drinking problem, but a hobby and maybe even
a
career.
It's not a problem unless you're bad at it.
Like we're freaking, yeah. I mean, it's a problem if you get paid for it, right?
Mm. Then it's a job.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, that's what I call my, that's why it's my gigoloing and not my man whoring, you know?
So, okay, they get to America and the U.S. government like sets them up with
fucking
jobs.
Fake jobs.
Like, with jobs. Like random jobs. Now, he first, because the narrator, he actually had lived in America, partly because he's half white, but he had gone, when he was like college age, he's a really smart guy. He had gone, been sent to America in sort of like this exchange program. He also speaks perfect English, partly from living in America, but
yeah, accent
perfect English, to like, you know, hang out in America. I didn't go to college to Occidental.
Well, he didn't do it. He did it on purpose.
He did, yes. And so he gets sent back there. So he gets the U.S. government is kind of like funding a lot of these things. And he gets a little stipend to like go and work there in the Asian Studies Department.
Because he's Asian.
Yeah, yeah. Literally. And this is, so Viet Tan Nguyen does work in academia. So this is him talking about academia. And his point is, even after America loses the Vietnam War and like, but you know, because he had this conversation with the college professor, with the Oriental Studies professor, and he is like, "You have a, you had, are you more of an Western spirit or an Asian spirit. I forget exactly what he says, but
he's pretty much noble savaging all of Asia.
And the narrator,
and he's the head of the department.
And the narrator is like, you know, I really kind of need this job because I have nothing here. So I'm just going to go along with what this guy says, but he's a fucking idiot. But this is Viet Tan Nguyen's saying, like, even after America lost the war, academia still had no idea, like, what Vietnam was like, which is part of the problem. Well, part of the reason America got into the Vietnam War, part of the, because America knew nothing about Vietnam and was like, oh, we hear there are communists over there, so I guess we have to stop them, not knowing anything about it. And even after the war, they still knew nothing about it.
Still don't.
But pretended they did.
I think the average person, well, they wouldn't say this, but they think a Vietnamese person, it's like, I can't believe it's not China. Like, they know almost nothing. They're going to round somewhere
between.
They don't
know anything about China either.
Well, anything they know about China, they're going to be like, it's like China, but more jungle. Like, that's what I think most, and not even insulting. Like, I don't think I've ever had a class where I learned about Vietnam, the Vietnam War. We never get there. We get to like 1942
because,
and it's June.
Because the people teaching it don't understand it either.
We just never get to the even remote present.
I actually did a ton of Vietnam War history in my
because you were a draft
years.
Dodger, Nate. You were fucking hiding in Saskatchewan.
Fled to the Great White North.
All right. Why did you read all about it, Nate?
No, really. I just ended up taking them as history classes. So I
more than one?
Did. Yes, actually. So it ended up coming
there
up a lot.
There was more than one?
It ended up coming up a lot.
Did you have a bunch of old draft dodger professors? Like, let me tell you something.
Kind of, yeah. That was kind of true. Anyway, so the narrator, he's like in America, and he's like first talks about academia, and he starts sleeping with the secretary in the department who's Japanese-American.
She's Nisei, which means second generation.
But she was put in the camps as a child.
They were. They were as well, yeah.
Yeah.
I think... not that there were that many of the third generation Japanese Americans. They were lumped in there too. Half.
Oh yeah. They all went. But she mentions like, yeah, I was there. And like the guy, her boss, still treats her as like, what do the Japanese and the Great East think of this thing? It's like, dude, I'm from Fresno. I don't know. Whatever, man. What a wise, silly little geisha you are. Like, you know, creepy shit like that. It's super weird.
I think people do this a lot with anybody who's foreign, especially like white people and like often well-meaning middle class, fairly liberal white people will say these things that like microaggressions, right? Like, is that how they do it where you're from? And it comes off really patronizing and really
Secaucus. Yeah.
but it's, you know, this character obviously is meant to highlight that attitude, which I'm sure in 1975 was absurd, because like they just started letting Asians into the country again
they had just got rid of the Exclusion Act.
What was it, the 65 immigration bill, somewhere around there? It was under Johnson.
Well, something like 100,000 refugees from South Vietnam were let into the United States in 1975, so it's a huge number
for sure. No, come on.
So the narrator, he is like kind of living his life in California, but also like the general, and is like,
he has a liquor store.
Liquor store, which the thing is, this is accurate. Like the former, I think it was the former president of South Vietnam, the final guy named Thieu, he ran a dry cleaners in Los Angeles after the war.
Really? Like, they set him up with that stereotype? They're like, what job could we give him? They picked that.
I think so, yeah.
That's what they were allowed to do.
That's impressive.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so the general, he owns a liquor store, and his wife, who never like worked a day in her life because they're very like aristocratic, she has to do all the cooking and all the cleaning and kind of resents it, but also becomes much more American by being way more assertive and way more. And there's a funny line about, you know, among the Vietnamese guys who came from South Vietnam, they're like, yeah, you know, men don't need balls here in America. The women have them already.
Yeah.
And so, and she eventually starts a restaurant where all the Vietnamese expats go, and everyone loves the food. That comes in later. Anyway, then the narrator meets with, and this is essentially gets sent a script, a film script, and it doesn't say it's the film script for Apocalypse Now, except it is. Like, that's what this part of the book is supposed to be. So the narrator, he like reads the script and he's like, but that's not how we'd say anything. That's not, they're this not, is inaccurate.
They're not saying anything. He's like,
yeah.
Can you maybe give dialogue to the Vietnamese people? It just says like, you know, peasant number three gibbers maniacally. Like, it doesn't have anything.
And he says the only thing they do is yell when they get shot and die. And he's like, you're not even having them yell right. And the narrator, he meets with the director, and who's just called the auteur.
Because it's Coppola, right? Was that Apocalypse Now?
So, yeah, it's supposed to be Francis Ford Coppola. But in the book, The Sympathizer, the movie that he ends up working on they go to the Philippines to film it, and there's all this stuff.
Which
but it
is
wasn't
where they
exactly,
filmed Apocalypse Now.
It wasn't exactly Apocalypse Now depicted in this book. It was sort of a mixture of Apocalypse Now and Platoon and probably some other Vietnam movies, American Vietnam War movies. And so the narrator becomes the advisor to the filming of essentially Apocalypse Now, and he's there to try and make it a little bit more believable, a little bit more sympathetic to the actual Vietnamese. And because he speaks Vietnamese, he like gets all the extras and he like pays them the dollar a day, because they're all, you know, refugees living in the Philippines, so they'll, you know, work for anything. One of the actors, like a famous, you know, they're very famous people, or at least very famous Asian actors, but it's also like the scenes that are actually like filmed in the movie are just like the Vietnam, you know, the American white guys are like such the badass like Marines, but the, you know, evil Viet Cong, they like capture one and there's this long like torture scene. And
no, they torture an American.
Yeah, yeah. The North
Vietnamese evil.
Vietnamese guys torture the American soldier. Yeah.
But
yeah.
That didn't happen? Like that was, I mean, that's like every Vietnam.
No, it did happen.
What was the one with Christian Bale there in Vietnam?
Christian Bale?
And Rob Steve, what's his name? Zahn? The guy from Save Your Silverman? Rob Steve Zahn?
Zahn?
Yeah, there's a movie with them. They're like POWs in a Vietnamese. Rescue Dawn, 2006 movie. And
I just can't take Steve Zahn seriously. He's a comedy guy.
Shot in Thailand. God damn it.
Yeah.
Also somewhere all along this time, it is really inconvenient. Narrator is still giving intel from the captain to, or, you know, taking intel about the captain to,
because the general is,
or his general. Yeah.
The general is basically trying to run a government in exile and raise money to reinvade Vietnam and take it back, which is an insane plan, but that's what they're going for.
It's hard to let go of things when you're a refugee, and you were, I mean, being a refugee to begin with must be difficult, but when you were on top 5 minutes ago, that must be really hard to let go.
This is literally what happened at the Bay of Pigs, though. The Cuban refugees were like, fuck it, we're going to fight Castro, and it was an epic disaster.
I remember watching a documentary where they were interviewing some of those guys that lived, and he was like, I hid in the bushes for 2 days eating lizards. It's like, I would just grab a lizard and suck on it till it was, I got any moisture out of it. I didn't want to die. Ugh. And that always stuck with me. Like, can you drink a lizard? That's basically what he talked about. Maybe it was a bad translator.
You can drain a lizard.
I've drained the lizard a few times today, during this podcast. You just can't see under my desk my piss bucket.
God damn you.
No, but he's still, the main character is still sending his like coded messages with invisible ink to his guy in Paris, who's sending stuff to the, further up the communist chain of command. So he has not left his side. You know, he's still a man of two sides. A theme.
So after like, you know, near the end of filming the movie, of working on the film, that is, there's a pyrotechnics accident, and the narrator is almost killed by, you know, accidentally almost being blown up. And the narrator thinks it's the auteur that did it, but, you know, he doesn't know.
You know, Francis Ford Coppola may not seem like he's capable of that, but you just ask that fucking horse from Godfather. That man will do things.
It was delicious.
You can make good sausage out of that. Sorry.
So then he goes back to America, and there's all this stuff about, like, the, you know, the assimilating, or the way that the Vietnamese people are assimilating in Los Angeles, but also they have to go and, oh yeah, another thing that happens is the general gets word that someone is sending intel about them back to North Vietnam. And so the narrator, or like the aide-de-camp, so the general
second
asks
time.
Him, who do you think it is? And of course it's him. So he's like, oh, I
don't
know.
Oh, yeah, they blame.
It was the it must be the major. You know what? He's fat. You can't trust fat guys.
Whoa.
So they go in. So he and Bon assassinate him. Like, literally, they go and shoot him in the head in his, like, garage.
I knew they were communists. I didn't know they were also fattists. Fascists? Fat?
If you're communist, if you're fat, it means you're taking...
Oh, I get it. I get it. Share. I understood. I get it.
But they're not communists. So the guys...
Oh,
yeah, that's
true.
The fled, that's fled. They're not communists.
No.
No, no.
Well,
oh, the narrator. He's a communist.
Yeah.
He is a secret communist, yeah.
But the one who said, do the killing,
yeah, no,
are not communists. Even though throughout the whole book, the narrator himself really never mentions much about being a communist or even like any of the, you know, opinions about it other than this is what I do. He's not like, man, I hate these capitalists. It's just like kind of everyone sucks, which I guess is the theme of the book. But he never really comes across as a true believer.
Well, they pick the major guy who's like a really nice guy. He's like
he seems to be a really nice dude.
Yeah, he's like a family man. He has like young, like a newborn, and they're like,
and he knows where all the best restaurants are.
He just loves snacks.
He takes him out. So before he's assassinated, takes the narrator out to like the best restaurants,
and then they shoot him. But the other guy seems to enjoy it more. Who's the accomplice in the killing?
Oh, Bon.
His friend
likes
Bon.
Because his whole family was murdered.
Right. So they're supposed to like clandestinely just like shoot him when he's not looking. He's like, hey, check it out. And he shoots him. Like it's a very Hollywood kind of move.
And we're near the end of the book where they're going back to Vietnam and Bon, that happens later. They actually end up going back. So they try to do a Vietnamese Bay of Pigs and do an attack that goes badly. And Bon is like, listen, I just don't believe in anything anymore. I don't believe in communism. I don't believe in capitalism. I just want to kill some people.
He wants to kill
communists. So he does. Yeah. Well, he wants to kill communists, but it's not because he believes in shit.
For anyone.
He just wants to kill people.
Meanwhile, the communist handlers are telling him, do not come back here. Stay in America. Keep doing your thing. He's like, I got one friend. I want to make sure he's okay. Even though he's not really much of a soldier. He's an organizational guy. But at this point, he's done some crazy shit in America. He has been involved in killing the fat guy, who was very nice.
Banged a Japanese
lady. He has to kill a guy who's running an activist newspaper. He doesn't want to, but he does.
Sonny.
And he's trying to bang the hottest lady he's ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Who is the general's daughter who grew up in America.
So she like...
Well, she didn't grow up in America, but she was sent to college in America.
Yeah, she's more Americanized.
And she like...
Definitely in terms of propriety in public.
And the general's wife is like, we do not speak of her. She is, because she wears like a mini skirt and played a tambourine at a wedding or something like that.
She sang and wore a mini skirt, yes.
She is the whore of Babylon. Like, she cannot be.
Saigon.
That's Miss Saigon. It's actually.
Oh.
Hmm. That's like, imagine how many times in the book they're like, do you ever miss Saigon? And like, I love that show. I don't know any of the songs from Miss Saigon, but...
Isn't that Madame Butterfly?
I think it is the same plot.
Yeah.
There are many, many versions of the Madame Butterfly plot made into film and musicals, and they're like, let's just change the name, change the characters' names, change the country, but they never take it out of Asia, so we still...
Except when they made The Mask, which is the same plot, I think.
The Mask, the one with Eric Stoltz and the big fucking...
No, the one with Jim Carrey.
That is not... God, shut the fuck up. Fuck you.
No, I've never seen Madame Butterfly. I have no idea what it's about.
Oh, it's a white guy goes and hooks up with an Asian broad. And he's like, I'll come back for you. And he's like, no, I won't. It's been she killed herself. Like, it's basically, I mean, there's...
Oh, okay.
Like, she gets pregnant that's with fun. The kid. And she's, and he's like, I have to go to America on business. I'll be back. And then he comes back. He's like, did I ever show you my wife, Elizabeth? And she's like, what the fuck, man? And he's like, listen, this is your... We weren't serious, were you? And then she kills herself at the end. There's a whole bunch of versions of it.
Well, that doesn't happen in this because he tries to bang her and then eventually does. And then he goes back to Vietnam. And the general's like, I know you banged my daughter. I hope you die over there. Maybe.
Actually, the general doesn't know he banged his daughter.
Oh, you're trying to.
He just says, we saw you talking to her at that wedding reception.
With your wiener.
You talked to her for a long time. How dare you?
Well, they had her being watched, so they saw him leaving her house, but they don't know the details. But it's not, he knows it's not good for daughter business. So then they go back to Vietnam to just, I don't know, they don't seem to be arriving with a whole fleet of people. It's just like
it's like one team. It's like eight guys and they're
tried a lot of guys last time, maybe a few guys will work this time.
And they're like trying to they try and slip across they go to Thailand and then they try and slip into Vietnam through Thailand. And it does not go well because they, you know, because first the narrator, he's already told his friend, he's already told them they're coming. So he's already there's no chance that this is going to work at all, which I think is also what happened with the Bay of Pigs, but I'm actually not sure about that. So they get there and couple of guys just die in the ambush, but Bon and the narrator are captured,
and a few other guys.
Yeah, and a few other guys too. So they're captured, and then this is where you find out that up to this point, the entire book has been the narrator. This is his confession. This is the confession he's writing in prison because he's being put in solitary confinement because no one. At his re-education camp, knows that he's been a double agent this whole time, except one guy, which you're going to find out about in just a second. And he's been in re-education camp because he's just too Americanized. He's too Westernized.
And he's also a halfsie, so he never belongs anywhere. It's kind of...
But he, for first, he's writing this confession to the commandant who just doesn't believe him. It's like, you Western pig. And there's to the commissar, but the commandant doesn't think you're ready yet. So he's writing to the, anyway, so the commissar
is in town.
Yeah. No. Which one? Which one?
Is that from that fucking song?
Don't turn around.
Oh.
I do not do that song.
I was trying to remember the lines for that song.
Don't turn around. Uh-oh.
The commissar's in town. Look out or something like that. Fucking shit. It's by a shitty 80s. I don't know if they were actually, I don't think they were even German. I think it was an English band, but.
No. Yeah.
Der Commissar.
So, but either way, he's in the worst summer camp ever.
So once he finishes his confession, the commandant.
Which has taken him a year. He's been in the camp for a year.
And the commandant is just this guy that's horribly burned all over. But then finally the narrator gets to talk to him. And it's his friend, his friend Man, that's been his name this whole time. But he didn't even recognize him because Man was he was in the North Vietnamese army, but he was napalmed on the final day of the war.
Oh, man.
He was horribly burned in a napalm attack, in the final attack that South Vietnam mounted.
The last napalm shot, the last
basically,
bomb.
Yeah. And he's horribly burned but didn't die.
We don't miss.
And now he's just being put in charge of this re-education camp because he can't be seen in town with his family and stuff like that. And so then he's like, you're my friend. You know, you've been my friend this whole time. And his friend's like, but yeah, you needed some re-education. But his friend is the only other one that really kind of understands that, oh, this is all bullshit. I'm just doing this because we won. And so he writes this whole confession, but then the narrator gets they send him to the torture chamber where they like first this like sleep deprivation, and there's this whole thing about how these are the exact same torture tactics that Americans used on the Vietnamese. And they torture him because you've left something out of your confession. And it was actually
this is very 1984-ish.
So very early in the book, you get this little paragraphs about how, yeah, there was that time one of the North Vietnamese agents got captured.
Oh, he's mentioned it like 1,000 times in the fucking book at this
point. Yeah, but only in passing, and only you don't know too much about it. This woman who was a North Vietnamese agent, she gets captured, and he like tries to, but he can't really help her because she's been found out, and he can't help her without giving away that he's also an agent, which wouldn't help anybody because then they'd both just die. And the one thing he didn't get right about in his confession was when he witnessed her being gang raped as her part of her torture.
In the most symbolism-laden part of the book written by an English professor, as you know, it's like it takes place on stage in a theater, and it's a bunch of Vietnamese people doing it to another Vietnamese person. Who's like, ah, look, we've done this to ourselves, kind of vibe.
And then the narrator gets let out of like a confinement. But at this, for the rest of the book, he calls himself We, because he's a man of two minds that can, you know, see both sides. And Man, his communist handler friend, is sending him back to America. Like, you and Bond are going to be allowed to escape, because what is this for? It's for nothing, because all of this, like, and, you know, and then he talks about, you know.
Well, so there's a very important question that he asked him, but he never answered, and it was, what is more important than independence and freedom? And the answer is, nothing.
America! Fuck yeah! It's like...
And it's because, why did we do this? It was for nothing. Because we fought, and he was like, from the North Vietnamese perspective, we fought for our independence and freedom, but we did it by imposing communism, which then takes away everyone's independence and freedom. And so what was it for? It was for nothing.
And we're doing all the same horrible shit that people did to us, to our own people now. So, and I guess this is freedom.
It's just a poor translation of war. What is it good for? Is what he's saying here at the end. It turns out, absolutely nothing. You could say it again. Even it bears repeating. But yeah, so it's like, oh.
This is also like a big. This is a big thing in Buddhism, which is one of the nominally Buddhist in
Vietnam, right?
Yeah, I mean, since the war, I don't know. But yes, there's a big Buddhist thing there. The concept of duality in Buddhism is one of the biggest things in there, which is, you know, it's weirdly complicated. I looked it up to see if I could understand it enough to like explain it, and I can't. But the gist of it is, it's called dualism, non-dualism, because, you know, we perceive things as dualistic.
And those are a pair. God damn it. It's dualism all the way down.
But the truth is that there's no such thing as dualism, because there's no actual separation of the things. We are all the one thing. And so when you say, what's more important than these things? Nothing. Nothing is also a very, very weird concept in Buddhism. That's one of the central things of like nothingness is what is like, what is something? Nothing is something. It's not nothing. Nothing,
oh, you
is
sound
a
like
thing.
A fucking English teacher right now when you're like, but this you is, can't this is just be what, not, this, doing, not this nothing.
Is this is in the book, and this is
in the
what
book, yeah.
The Buddhism.
No, I'm saying you sound like an English teacher, and they're like,
oh,
how
yeah.
could it be not nothing? That means it's something. Like, God damn
well, the
it.
Idea, oh, there was one of those fucking Zen koans, you know, like the little riddles that make you figure out enlightenment.
They break your brain.
Is, the guy says to his dog, what is enlightenment? And in Japanese, the dog sound is, it says mu, but mu also means nothing.
God damn it.
So they're like, oh, nothing. And that's why at the end of the book, when he's saying we, it's because he's no longer dualistic. He is everything together.
No wonder they're beating us on these maths fucking countries testing that their dogs are smarter than the fucking people. The dogs are enlightened. Dog knows.
The dogs are enlightened. Got a little robe and everything.
That's interesting, but I don't. I mean, I obviously it's all very much there on purpose, but
it's very. Like, I know enough of it to be like I get what they're saying. I don't get it.
Air quotes.
So Jimmy just did finger quotes for the audience listening.
I tried to enunciate the air quotes, but it's hard. Yeah, I don't get it.
He spoke with italics.
But it is. It's like, yeah, I see what they're going for. But yeah, I don't understand the concept beyond reading it on something and saying, sure, yeah, if you say so. Because getting it would be enlightenment, like at the end of the
which
book.
Which you can't realizes, do. Really, you can't.
No, you get it eventually. But he gets it eventually when he realizes there are no, you know, maybe more pragmatically, there are no sides in this. Everyone sucks. People say they're doing these things for their, you know, they're doing this for the right, because of the right reasons. Everyone's doing it for the same reasons. It's, you know, control and power and
petty revenge.
Shittiness.
Just, sure. I don't know if I needed a book to tell me that people are shitty, but, you know.
Well, nothing will tell you people are shitty more than the Vietnam War.
But it gave us so many great songs by the Doors, you know. That's the duality of it.
Two or three of those.
So anyway, so I've read it before, but what did you guys think?
I liked it. I liked it a lot, actually. It's a super literary book. You're like, oh yeah, this author.
It's very heady.
Knows his way around a dissertation. this is a book for scholars almost, you know. This is a book that's written for the people who subscribe to the New York Review of Books. Like, they get them just every month. They get the next one. Like, this is for book nerds in some ways. This is awards bait. And I like that kind of book often. I do. I thought it was, well, it rode the line for me between being pretentious and forced and bloated, and it stayed on the side of being, you know, thought out and through composed, and
there are no sides,
clever.
Michael.
I'm picking, no, fuck that shit. I'm a Westerner. I'm picking a side. And
good versus evil.
I thought it was it's long and busy and convoluted, but I like that. It reminded me of like the Michael Chabon books we've done a million years ago, like that kind of a book from the last 20 years, or 30 years or whatever. You're like, oh my God, there's a million things happening, and it's clever, and it's a kind of historical, and I really did enjoy it. And I know shit about Vietnam except what I watched in Forrest Gump. So that's what I know about, like, that.
It's practically a documentary.
I know. Yeah, that and Full Metal Jacket, and I think I've seen Platoon. I've actually never watched Apocalypse Now, so I don't even know.
What?
No, I've never
how
seen it.
Can you? Oh my God! How can you not have seen that,
Nate?
Nate,
shut the
Freddy
fuck up. You've not seen
it. I was making fun of you, because that's what you always do to me.
I named three movies you never saw. Yes, it's true. I've seen part of it. I've seen the clips. Like, Robert Duvall in the helicopters and the Ride of the Valkyrie.
Yeah. Dennis Hopper is also in it, though.
Don't they like surf? It's like a weird fucking movie.
Oh, it gets weirder and weirder as it goes on. Yeah,
it's very weird.
And it's like 3.5 hours long. I mean, come on.
It's Kubrick, right?
No, it's Coppola.
Coppola.
Oh, Coppola. Okay.
Kubrick made
Coppola
Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, all right.
So yes, Nate, Nate won Mike and Jimmy 4,023. but yeah, I never took a class in Vietnam. I know shit about it. I actually took a class in grad school that was called History of Southeast Asia. I was like, oh, that's going to be all about Vietnam. And on day one, the professor was like, they mislabeled it on the program. It's just South Asia. And it was just India. I almost learned about it. No, but I thought this was a great pick from Nate, even though I yelled at him, told him to shut the fuck up. I think it's a good book.
it was very good. It took me a while to like get into it, because it's dense, and it took a long time to just fucking even read. But it was definitely worth it in the end. It's very good. it is rife with literary devices.
But also stuff happens.
Yeah.
Stuff does
it's
happen.
It's not just a navel-gazing book about that we're just, you know, it's long passages, but what does this all mean? No, like, stuff happens. And it's interesting stuff, like the
colorful characters.
When it goes to Apocalypse Now, it's like, that was very unexpected. It's like,
It's memorable characters who are weird and they're different and they fit in and it doesn't seem too forced. It was not just a book for 417 pages contemplating duality. It was laying it out in a pretty thick way.
There was certainly a lot of that.
Sure. Can't be helped. But I thought it was great. What do you think, Nate, reading it a second time?
It was still very good the second time. And we've done so many shitty books on the podcast, just like so many terrible, terrible books. Again, I was like, oh, thank God. This is actually really nice.
Now, have you read the sequel?
I have not. We've done too many other fucking books.
I
have not had time.
It didn't win any awards, so, yeah.
Well, you know, once you've won the Pulitzer, it's kind of like, okay.
Though, if you look at the cover of the second book, which is called The Empathizer, no, it's called The Committed, the duality thing couldn't be any fucking clearer than just Google the cover of The Committed by Viet Tan Nguyen.
Oh, yeah.
Is there two of the picture?
It's a cartoonish face that is half white and like half black as if it's in shadow, wearing sunglasses. It's like, oh, subtle. Which is interesting for a thing that ends with saying there is no side to be committed. It's kind of hard to commit to having no side.
Well, the point is that there might seem to be sides, but the sides don't exist. They're all one and the same. You can't have sides without them both being there.
Why not?
Anyway, tell us about your side. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter or drunkguysbc. That's what it is.
Or go to Facebook and Instagram at drunkguysbookclub.
And go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub or just leave us a review if you sympathize with our plight to keep this podcast going.
And you can find us on Goodreads. We're not fucking around.
Show us that you will love us long time.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.